Welcome back to A-E-I-O-U, a podcast about Austria. This is Thames Darwin. At the end of the last episode, we discussed two important figures who would have major impacts on their own time and on the centuries to follow, Martin Luther and King Charles of Spain. We'll start today by talking about Luther. As I mentioned last episode, Luther was a Saxon and launched the Reformation from the Saxon city of Wittenberg. So why talk about him in a podcast about Austria, a famously Catholic land? The answer is that, for Luther to survive unscathed the initial reaction to his protest against the Vatican, he had to negotiate the politics of the Holy Roman Empire, now ruled by the Habsburg family, who were also rulers of Austria. In addition, although you wouldn't know it looking at Austria today, the Reformation sank deep roots into the soil of Austria, and it was only with a concerted effort that Catholicism was reasserted in the Habsburg lands. We also talked in an earlier episode about Jan Hus, the Bohemian reformer who was executed for heresy a century before Luther. Part of what we should try to determine in this episode is why Hus failed while Luther was successful. But let's start with a more general concept. It's said that the modern period in European history begins around 1500. But what does modern mean in this context? It means a few things. Greater literacy, urbanization, industrialization, the emergence of a bourgeois class, as well as the creation of a middle class. The process of modernization in Europe is said to have begun with the Renaissance, which provided for some liberalization of government and the contribution of scientific thinking to European intellectual culture. By 1500 or so, although pre-Renaissance forms of thinking still prevailed in many places, society was opening up more and more. The rise of Luther is tied to all these phenomena. For one thing, literacy was a huge factor in Luther gaining the support of a larger and more diverse number of people. By introducing the printing press with movable type, Johannes Gutenberg, an artisan from Mainz in the Palatinate, contributed to a revolution in literacy and information sharing. Whereas before Gutenberg, books had to be written out by hand, a process that took months per book, now books could be printed in far larger numbers in a far shorter amount of time. Unsurprisingly, the first book to be widely printed was the Bible, the Vulgate Latin translation, in particular, used by the Catholic Church. Luther was not just an Augustinian friar, a point often forgotten when discussing him, but he was also a professor of Bible study at Wittenberg University, so he was literate in both German and Latin, and in this regard, he was not unusual. Many members of the clergy were literate, although not all of them. It tended to correlate with level in the church hierarchy. Laypeople, therefore, had the lowest level of literacy, followed in order by monks and nuns, priests and deacons, bishops, and the Pope. But there was no guarantee that everyone at all levels was literate. There still is not today, but it was even less so back then. Many people in the nobility were illiterate. For instance, Gutenberg changed that. With an abundance of books came a far lower cost to teach people to read. Of course, the desire of powerful people to control the flow of information remained substantial, and that is why Luther's case was so important. Luther published his 95 Theses, the text that first drew the attention of the Vatican, in Latin. However, the subsequent texts he wrote that resulted in his trial were published in German, and they drew the attention of the nobility and some common people as a result. Few of those people, after all, could read Latin. Compare that to the case of Jan Hus, who, while he had the important support of the King of Bohemia, nevertheless lacked more widespread support because so few people had read his arguments. The second key issue is the lack of ability of both the emperor and the Pope to enforce their wills. This point requires a bit of explication. It's not as if these two men completely lacked the ability to coerce people to do what they wanted. Given that they both commanded armies, they certainly did. However, bearing in mind that the period we're examining is one in which electricity, the steam engine, the internal combustion engine, telegraphy, and countless other technologies did not exist, there was necessarily a geographic limit to how far one could exert one's influence. We have already seen that, despite the Holy Roman Empire being a sort of state or government, the numerous states under its control were constantly fighting one another, and often they were fighting the Pope as well. To say nothing of those times when the Pope and the Emperor were also fighting each other. Hus, like Luther, was an educated man who taught at a university, and promulgating his ideas in such a venue, he drew the attention of more orthodox authorities in the church in Prague. Importantly, at that time, the church was undergoing its great schism, during which there were two and sometimes three simultaneous claimants on the papacy. Thus, although Hus was originally protected by the authority of King Wenceslaus, the king's brother, Sigismund, who was then the king of Germany and eventually emperor himself, betrayed a promise of safe passage for Hus to Constance, in what is today southernmost Germany. Hus was arrested upon arrival in Constance, tried, convicted, and executed in short order. Contrast this case with Luther's. First, Luther's theses were translated into German within a few weeks and were distributed across Central and Western Europe within months. Luther had addressed the theses directly to the Archbishop of Mainz, who in turn had sent them to the Vatican before the end of the year. Pope Leo X set about investigating Luther and determining whether he had committed heresy. The Pope first warned Luther that he would be excommunicated if he did not recant. 6 months later, Luther was in fact excommunicated, the theses were banned, and Luther was summoned to appear before an imperial council, or date. All these points would seem to make Luther's case more dire than Hus's. The papacy's schism was over, and the emperor and pope were on the same page with regard to Luther's heresy. However, whereas Hus was betrayed and his promise of safe passage to Constance broken, Luther's guarantee was not broken and he safely arrived in Worms in April 1521. Then, because his guarantee of safe passage included being returned home safely, Luther left Worms without recanting, and Emperor Charles V issued an edict in May formally declaring Luther a heretic and removing him from the state's protection against harm. However, despite some attempts to have Luther arrested and executed, he never was. For one thing, there was more than one monarch supporting Luther. In addition to the Elector of Saxony, where Luther was from, he enjoyed the support of several other monarchs in the empire, although not of the emperor himself. The emperor's edict could only be enforced as much as the monarchs under the emperor's authority agreed to do so. If they refused, beyond periodically reminding the monarchs that Luther was an enemy of the government, he couldn't do much else. Plus, the horses had left the barn by the time Luther appeared at Worms. Other reformers had emerged or would emerge shortly in Switzerland, England, Scandinavia, and elsewhere in places beyond the control of the emperor. Before we leave Luther behind, we should take a moment to be clear on what he actually believed and taught. Essentially, there were three things: the inerrancy of the Bible, compared to the dogmatic approach to knowledge of the Catholic Church; the ability to be saved by faith alone, compared to the Catholic requirement of faith and good works; and the denial of several of the Catholic sacraments as truly being sacraments. But the reasons why many people living in Europe, particularly the ruling elites, chose Lutheranism over the Catholic Church was more concerned with politics than belief. It was 2 years into Luther's mission that Charles V became emperor and inherited Austria. He would not be crowned by the Pope for a decade, but his grandfather Maximilian had established a precedent of being crowned outside Rome, so Charles was made emperor immediately. He was the last emperor to be crowned by a pope. That said, Charles served as Archduke of Austria for only a few years. In 1522, he abdicated in Austria in favor of his brother Ferdinand. Charles remained emperor, but Ferdinand would rule Austria. We should briefly acknowledge that, between 1519 and 1521, Charles resided over one of the largest empires in human history. It was his empire about which it was said, "The sun never sets on it." Only later would this saying be applied to the British Empire. Moreover, Charles was easily the most powerful man in the world in his time or likely any time before then. But as we have already seen, even this power was limited in how far it could extend. So we'll leave Charles behind for now, although likely we'll see him at least once more, and follow Ferdinand back to Vienna. For the 30-odd years that Ferdinand ruled Austria, two key issues were the focus of his attentions: Habsburg rule in Bohemia and Hungary, and the continuing Protestant Reformation. The first issue, of rule in Bohemia and Hungary, came into focus in 1526, when Louis II, who ruled the two countries in personal union, died in battle. Both Bohemia and Hungary had elective monarchies, as the empire itself did, and Ferdinand put himself forward as a candidate as king over both realms. Bohemia quickly confirmed Ferdinand as king. In Hungary, different factions backed either Ferdinand or a Transylvanian count named John Zápolya. The two men went to war, with Ferdinand winning twice, and Zápolya fled to the Ottomans and enlisted their help. As a result, Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent besieged Vienna, with the ultimate result being partition of Hungary between a Habsburg portion, governed from Vienna, and an Ottoman portion governed by the Sublime Porte. Ferdinand would try once more to acquire Hungary by invasion when Zápolya died and was succeeded by his son. But the Ottomans again intervened. War continued sporadically for decades. Nor was Ferdinand's rule over Bohemia a calm affair. Revolts by both the nobility and Protestants had to be put down with Austrian or imperial power. In the case of the Protestant insurrection, Ferdinand and his brother Charles faced off against the Schmalkaldic League. So what was the Schmalkaldic League? It was an alliance of Protestant monarchs in the HRE who banded together to pool military resources and power. Established in 1531, its goal was to prevent encroachment on League members' territory by Emperor Charles. Their guiding philosophy was the Augsburg Confession, which laid out Lutheran belief for the emperor. Unsurprisingly, Charles rejected it, although Ferdinand acknowledged its validity in declaring a religious peace in 1532. For more than a decade, this religious peace held. It broke down when Charles began building alliances with some of the Protestant monarchs and mobilizing an imperial army. A short war ensued, which Charles won, gaining the ability to depose the Elector in Saxony. A second war with the League occurred in the 1550s, which the League won. The ultimate upshot of this peace was a treaty known as the Peace of Augsburg. According to the Peace of Augsburg, concluded in 1555, any monarch within the empire could decide on the official religion in his domain. Freedom of emigration was given to those who were of a different faith. The exception was the so-called ecclesiastical states, which were ruled by bishop electors. If a bishop elector changed religion, the people living under his jurisdiction retained their own religion, and the bishop had to resign. Finally, in a section known as Ferdinand's Declaration, some knights and cities were exempted from the first rule, particularly if they were among the original Lutheran strongholds. That's where we'll leave things for this episode. We'll pick up in the next episode with the effects of the Peace of Augsburg, Ferdinand's reign as emperor, and how Protestantism fared in Austria. Thanks for listening.